2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
This is the MLB Daily Dispatch brought to you by good folks over at DFSArmy.com. If you're not signed up with us, make sure you do so. Use the promo code OPENINGDAY. That's going to get you 7 free days here at the DFS Army to check out and see what you like in here. Great additions to our site. We've got the Domination Station, which pumped out a whole bunch of winning lineups for the PGA Masters over the weekend. Even got me involved in the mix there as well. We've got that, of course, all the tools that we got for baseball, the MLB lineups page for our VIP members gives everybody a great idea of what's going on around the league each day and how they're hitting against that handedness of pitcher. Also got the analytics corner that me and Burns do a tag team on and whoop this thing up and get it into shape so it's ready each day for each slate. Along with that, you get 24 access to our Slack channel where you can chat with me, Keith, Kevin, Taco, Chop, all the best names in the business, all in one spot. You can get it. DFSArmy.com. Use the promo code PODCAST. I'm sorry, opening day. Wow. Really screwed that intro up. Anywho, this is Al Walsh. I'm your host. You can find me on Twitter at 14a.walsh. And you can find my co-host, Keith Hall, at Boomers DFS Daddy. So a nice little weekend of sports. I really didn't do too much in baseball, but we had your boy Westbrook getting the triple-double record yesterday. Congrats to him. And then, of course, big splurge Garcia winning the Masters.
Whoa. Wait a second.
In a phenomenal playoff.
You have to add in the fact that he hit a game-winning shot as well.
I don't have to do shit.
Dude, that shot was from, like, Steph Curry range.
Yeah, whatever. So, we had Russell Westbrook and Sergio Garcia as our ballers of the weekend.
I think Sergio's was better. And I say this, you know, obviously everybody here knows that I'm a huge Westbrook fan. But I think the Sergio, I think that was... Honestly, it was probably the best of the weekend, in my opinion. How many heartbreaks has this dude had in majors over the course of his career, and then to come out and like just raw emotion, it was phenomenal. I loved it. Like I thought that was phenomenal. I loved watching that yesterday. That was fantastic. So that was my favorite part of the weekend.
I was sort of conflicted. Like, I'm a big Sergio fan, but I had Justin Rose in my DraftKings lineup. So I was like, do I really need the extra, like, $10 that I would have got off it? I was like, I'll just, you know, not that which way I was rooting would push the overall outcome. But, yeah, it was good to see Sergio. I mean, so many times he's choked it down the stretch there and – you know, he's a guy that was sort of vilified for a while, you know, on the PGA Tour. But I think everybody kind of, you know, we're all looking for somebody new to root for with Tiger Woods out of the game. And, yeah, I think we've kind of found it, you know, over the last couple of years there with Rory and Spieth and even Dustin Johnson. But Sergio's been pecking away at the top of that leaderboard up there. But good to see him finally break through. And then especially on the same day, you know, that basically kind of – overshadows what Westbrook does. This is the time of the year where, you know, we got what, like 3-4 sports all going on at the same time. And Westbrook, nothing short of amazing yesterday. Gets the MVP chance in Denver, looking like, you know, he's running away with the thing. And it's gonna be very good to see the fact that we're gonna have Westbrook against Harden there in that first round. And yeah, we see this plenty of times where somebody, you know, or guys who, I guess won the MVP going up against the guy that kind of got snubbed for it. Not that Harden got snubbed for it, but I think the most notable One of these was the last time when Derrick Rose won the MVP and then had to go face LeBron when he was on Miami in that one series. Did not go so well for the guy that won the MVP, but no. In your case, hopefully it goes much better for Westbrook this time around.
I'm not expecting anything, and I'm throwing it out there and being honest. I knew we were going to make the playoffs. I've said all along that if we get out of the first round of the playoffs, that I would consider this a successful season. I still consider it a successful season considering, you know, what we had, what we lost, and then trying to replace it. I don't think Kevin Durant is a replaceable type of player, obviously. But I've always said that, you know, if we can get to the first round, get a, you know, a somewhat decent seed and not just squeak in at that eight seed and, you know, possibly win a first-round playoff series, then I would, you know, consider it a successful season. But I did not expect what happened with Houston to happen either. You know, they barely squeaked into the playoffs last year. I did not expect them to do what they did this year. So they had a good season, and I'm taking nothing away against Harden. Like, I honestly don't think that Harden lost the MVP. I just think that Russ took it. Any other season, you can have a debate between, you know, a Kawhi, a Russ, or a Kawhi, a Harden, and a LeBron. But what Russ has been able to do this year is just by far and away, it's amazing. So.
Yes, indeed. All right, so we're not going to really handle any NBA talk today just because, you know, we're coming down to the last 3 days of the season and so much is up in the air just in terms of players and rotations and whatnot. We're starting to get a little bit more clear of a picture as to, you know, what's going to be going on in these playoff matchups. As I just mentioned a short while ago, we're going to have the Rockets and the Thunder squaring off in the first round. That's going to be a lot of fun, you know, for pretty much everybody to watch in this one. But, you know, you still got the Cavs and the Celtics there going for that one seed. They're both tied neck and neck. The Cavs would get that number one seed if, you know, if they end up tied exactly with the same records. But, and then, you know, on the other side of the East, you got the Bulls and the Heat vying for that last playoff spot there. Pacers still lurking around there in the seven hole. But, you know, everything kind of, you know, besides really the Cavs and the Celtics, well, I should say the top of the East and the bottom of the East looks kind of set. Probably we're going to have, what, Warriors-Blazers. That's a matchup that's definitely going to happen. Looking like we'll see Spurs-Grizzlies. Clippers and the Jazz, they're both tied for that 4 and 5 spot. So
they're going to play. It's just the seeding is yet to be decided. So the Western Conference playoff matchups are done.
Yes.
It's just the seeding that, you know, you have to get figured out there. And I honestly don't think either one of them cares, to be completely honest. I guess if you're the Clippers, you would prefer to have Game 7 at home rather than on the road. So
they've been there plenty of times.
Yeah, you kind of got to go, you know, go after it and see what happens. And then, you know, if you get it, great. If not, then, you know, just rest up and get ready for a hard fought series. That's going to be a great basketball series. It's not going to be a good DFS series.
Yes. All right, so with all that being said, you know, if you have any NBA questions, just definitely hit us up in the NBA channel. We can get to them. But, again, with so much up in the air right now, it really doesn't make sense to dedicate an entire podcast to the damn thing.
We will start talking more NBA when the playoffs do start because that's when, you know, well, I mean, we did it last year. We've done it, you know. That's when we really, really, really start hitting it hard again, and we kind of start dominating again. So,
All right, let's talk about the baseball main slate. Now, we do have a couple games here on the early slate, but by the time this pod is done, we won't be able to, you know, have our analysis with it. And then, you know, have it in time for you guys. But, you know, Rays at Yankees, going to be the Yanks opening day. Just pointing out a couple important matchups here. But A's at Kansas City. It's going to be, you know, the first game at home for the Royals, where they'll be with that Yordano Ventura, who died in the offseason. Interesting in that one, they, you know, the Royals kind of did their rotation the way that would make sense to do this. And they said that Danny Duffy was actually very close with Yordano Ventura. And they, you know, they pushed some things back a couple days ago so that it would be Ian Kennedy getting the start today. Not that Kennedy wasn't close with Ventura, but they felt that he was, you know, old enough, mature enough to deal with this sort of situation. Definitely going to be a lot of emotions flowing around, you know, Kauffman Stadium today. So,
which is a great stadium, by the way. It's one of the older ones. It's one of the older ones. But when they redid that stadium, it for those of you that weren't around the Army last year, me and my wife had the privilege to go watch.
We can drive Benoit.
To go watch the Red Sox and. Royals there in the K, and it was a day-night doubleheader, and it is a very, very, very nicely well-done stadium. And that crowd is honestly probably one of the better ones that I've ever kind of experienced. It's going to be, like you said, an emotional roller coaster ride today, and I'm looking for you know, the leaders of the offense, guys like Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer, to kind of take over that game.
Fair enough. You know, of course, we got the huge pitching duel at Comerica Park today with with Justin Verlander and Chris Sale. Sale doing this matchup with Verlander for the fifth time, but his first time as a member of the Boston Red Sox, so that should be a whole lot of fun. Interesting to note in that one, too, both teams have the second fewest amount of strikeouts here early on in the 2017 season. And then, of course, the Giants going to have their home opener up against the Diamondbacks. That should be a fun one to watch, too. A lot of slugging going on in the Arizona portion of this series, so it'll be great to see what happens once they go to Pitcher's Ballpark and Fuego.
If we do get this out before the early slate, which I don't think we're going to, because
we're quick, not that quick.
It starts in an hour. I hope that everybody stacked up the White Sox, because there's some pretty damn good, at least in one lineup, there's some pretty damn good BVP. The Tigers. There's some pretty damn good BVP against Mr. Sale there.
Indeed, indeed. All right, let's talk about this main slate here. I believe only five games to get to on this one. Yes, indeed. All right, let's start it out with the St. Louis Cardinals at the Washington Nationals here. We've got Adam Wainwright going up against Tanner Roark. I love saying his name. It's so fun. Wainwright, 2-0 against the Nationals in his last two starts with a 2.25 ERA. Did have a complete game in one of these starts. 16 innings, had a .69 whip against them here, 4 earned runs, did give up 3 homers, but did have 13 strikeouts, and the Nationals only batted .145 against them in these last two starts. You know, if we want to talk about Tanner Roark in this one, he got the win in his 2017 debut that was up against the Marlins. 6 innings, 3 hits, 2 walks, 2 earned, and he had 6 strikeouts as well. He pitched well enough, but if I'm not mistaken, I don't think he got the win in that one. I think the bullpen kind of screwed that one up for him. But when we're looking at pitchers here, what sticks out to you?
Really, honestly, it was how good Wainwright kind of looked his last start out. It was not, you know, vintage dominant Adam Wainwright, but it was better than what we saw at the beginning of last season. I like him. I think he's a very interesting tournament play, but I've got more interest in guys like Bryce Harper, Jason Worth, guys like that that just kind of tend to really, really, really put a charge into the baseball. So
sure. Now remember, we saw the Cardinals just absolutely screwed the pooch yesterday at home against the Reds. Everybody thinking, hey, you know, the Phils beat up on Scott Feldman, so we certainly can too with the Cardinals. And that did not happen. Even Carlos Martinez did not have a good start there. So I'm going to be looking for the Nationals to come out, or I'm sorry, for the Cardinals to come out with a little bit of vigor against the Nationals in this one. If you remember, you know, the last time that these two teams played last season, a lot of runs were scored between the two. So I'm not necessarily looking for pitching in this one because I think that there are some great spots here. But, yeah, I would more or less be looking to the bats here. Cardinals offense was tied for the third best weighted runs created plus last season against right-handed pitching, 107. Not much history for the Cardinals offense up against Tanner Roark, with the exception of Dexter Fowler. No other Cardinals have a double-digit amount of at-bats up against Roark. But on the other side of the things, a lot of these Nationals have some pretty good numbers against Wainwright. You know, Bryce Harper, Adam Lind, Daniel Murphy, Ryan Zimmerman. They've all put some charges into the ball against Wainwright over the last couple seasons. But anyone in particular standing out to you from both sides with the bats?
You would have had to ask, huh? I'm not really.
Okay.
I'm not too enthralled. I'm not too enthralled about this game and kind of the prospects of it. I mean, one of the things that we talk about is trying not to take too much emphasis on their first start of the season. This is now we're going through the second time through the rotation. The odds of it, you know, happening close to what it did the last time are lower. You know, we saw Carlos Martinez, like you said yesterday, who came out and dominated in the first start, just come out and kind of, you know, look like a completely different pitcher yesterday. And besides the fact, besides the Jeremy Guthrie incident, that happened over the weekend. I expect a lot of these pitchers that kind of struggled to kind of bounce back a little bit. And some of these pitchers that kind of, you know, had good starts that were, to kind of come down a little bit. I don't know. What are you thinking?
I mean, you know, certainly the Harpers, your Daniel Murphy's all interesting. Remember, Trey Turner had a hamstring injury.
I think that's going to go way, way, way underlooked on the table, because now you've got, not that Adam Eaton isn't good at setting the table. I just don't think he's definitely not Trey Turner. And I think that could end up, maybe not, you know, today or tomorrow, but depending on how long Trey Turner's out, I think that could really, really, really end up hurting this Nationals lineup if he's out for an extended period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you'll see, that you're probably, again, Adam Eaton there, the one hole. Now, I know they have the ability. Turner hurt himself early in the game, actually.
He hurt him in the first inning.
Yeah, all right. So, you know, we haven't seen that Nationals lineup without him yet. What they're probably going to do is bring Jason Worth up to the two hole. And then, you know, you'll see Zimmerman.
I've got Anthony Rendon there right now.
Ah, okay, okay.
And yeah, everybody, and then everybody else past Daniel Murphy moving up a spot. Because Rendon was hitting in that five hole, and then it was Zimmerman, Worth, Drew, Wieters. And now I've got, you know, Stephen Drew's going to get extended playing time, who's actually kind of a little sneaky play today. He's a guy that we like to have versus right-handed pitching because, yeah, he might strike out like 15 times, but he could also hit 15 bombs. He's got a very, very – now, his BVP versus Adam Wainwright's not great, but he's a guy that's still got a 209 ISO over the last couple years versus right-handed pitching. you're playing him as a min salary option at shortstop on FanDuel this evening, and you're playing him to get off the guys like Trevor Story. you're getting off of the Addison Russells. You're getting off of the Asdrubal Cabrera. There's not a lot of shortstop options, so I don't mind just completely punting the shit out of it to get off of Trevor Story, who we'll talk about a little bit later, and hoping that you get a bomb out of him.
Yeah, that could certainly work. Look, I don't mind some guys here from this Cardinals lineup. Not mistaken, right-handed bats were hitting Roark much better last season. So, you know, the first start that Roark had, I didn't mind going with some right-handed bats of the Marlins. I know I went with JT Realmuto, Giancarlo Stanton. It worked out with Realmuto, not so much with Stanton. So I think if you're going to go that way, that wouldn't be a bad idea. That means Aldemus Diaz could certainly work out here. Yadi Molina, we all know the catcher position is a tough one to nail down each night. That wouldn't be a bad idea, but you know,
Diaz
course,
has been the only Cardinal consistently hitting the ball this year so far, and that's a shocker. Like I expected this Cardinals lineup to do a little bit more than what they have been doing. Let me ask you a question here. I don't know where you're going with this, so I'm really kind of interested. Matt Carpenter, do you remember the conversation that we had a lot with him last year? Three hole.
I don't. Well, you're gonna have to remind me, but I remember having
how
a conversation.
If he wasn't in the one hole that we were off of him, that his maybe. Just his overall production out of the one hole versus out of the three hole was just absolutely 100%. Like it was worth a fade when he was gonna be, you know, popular. I think on a 4 or 5 game slate, he's going to be kind of maybe not extremely popular, but he's going to be popular. I really don't mind fading Matt Carpenter because let's see here. I'm trying to pull up his splits here real quick for his career. And Baseball Reference is being a douche. Oh, here it is. Nope, they're still being douches.
Yeah, again, but that kind of makes sense, though, right? If Roark is having more of a hard time with righties, then sure. But, you know, I wouldn't mind staying off Carpenter.
Yeah, but Carpenter's a lefty.
Right. So if Roark is having trouble with the righties...
Then that means that lefties are hitting him? I don't know.
Roark.
I'm trying to figure out where you're going here.
Roark, the pitcher, right? Right. He's having trouble with righties.
Okay, so here's the... Yeah, I got you now. Here's the stats for Matt Carpenter. He's got 480, and I know it's a small sample size, but you would think that the run production would be a little bit better, coming out of like the three hole or, you know, the four hole or anything like that. Cause he's hit in every spot in the lineup, over his career, but most of the time it's been leadoff. He's got, you know, most of it's been one or two, but his batting average and his OBP and his slugging are by far the best out of the one hole over a consistent amount of at-bats. I mean, it drops almost 40 points. His batting average drops almost 40 points from the one hole to any other position.
Wow.
I mean, just this season in 16 games out of the three hole, you know, he's batting under 200. His slugging is under 200, or is just a 214 with an OPS of 548. Like, he's just not comfortable there. But the problem is that you went and you signed Dexter Fowler, who is a better maybe not a better leadoff hitter, but who is a more of a typical prototype leadoff hitter. I don't know. I think, you know, I we get on Mike Matheny a lot with, you know, the construction of his lineups, just because we don't feel like he really knows how to put together a good lineup. He might need to, in order to get this offense jump-started, because make no mistake, Matt Carpenter is the catalyst for this offense. If the Cardinals expect to do anything in the Central this year, they need Matt Carpenter to play and to hit. He might need to think about kind of shaking up this offense and putting Diaz in the three hole, moving Dexter Fowler down and putting Matt Carpenter back in the one hole.
Heavy, heavy, heavy thoughts here. I just want to say with Dan Murphy, his 480 average to start the season is second best in the National League. Ryan Zimmerman also has three homers, tied for most in the National League as well.
Tied with Mark Reynolds.
Oh, Jesus.
All right, moving along. I predict that Zimmerman's going to beat him in home runs over the course of the season, though. Yeah. I had to throw a Mark Reynolds drop in there.
Of course, of course. It's your team. We'll talk about him in a little bit. But we got to talk about my team first. We're hosting the New York Mets. This is going to be Jacob DeGrom going up against Jared Eichhoff. DeGrom looked amazing in his first start back from elbow surgery, six strikeouts in six innings against the Atlanta Braves. DeGrom has just owned the Phillies. They should be the Philadelphia DeGroms, but thank God they're not. 4-0, 2.42 ERA in his last seven starts versus the Phils. He's got a .96 whip in 44 and two-thirds innings against him. Only 12 earned runs in that span and 44 strikeouts in the 44 and two-thirds innings. No one really from the Phillies has particularly great numbers. Freddie Galvis can somehow keep Freddie Galvis off the bases. If DeGrom can keep Freddie Galvis off the bases, he'll be okay. So don't worry, he'll be fine. Jared Eichhoff for the Phils, he is no slouch either. He had a pretty good start against the Reds, but he ran into the Brandon Finnegan train that day. Not something that nobody ever wants to do. But he went 6 2/3, gave up five hits, a walk, two earned. One was a homer and six strikeouts against the Reds. Didn't take the loss in that, but he still did get a quality start. Speaking of bad luck, he's had plenty of it against the Mets. 1-4 with a 2.66 ERA in his last seven starts against the Mets. In 44 innings, he's got a whip of exactly one, only given up 13 earned runs, 43 strikeouts in those 44 innings, and the Mets have an opposing batting average of .204 against him there. I can just tell you right now, and this is something ridiculous, and I know this all the time being a Phillies fan, but the first time that the Mets and the Phils play each season, the Mets just wipe the floor with them. It's so messed up. And
like in a good way or a bad way for you, yeah, for the Phillies? Like they just absolutely kill them?
Way. No, the Mets just beat them. Like they put up 10 runs. They just make the game very uninteresting for myself.
Redheaded stepchild.
I don't know about all that. We have a World Series championship within the last 10 years. These guys only have their World Series championship because Buckner was a lazy fuck and couldn't pick up the damn ground ball.
Let's go ahead and rub that in, why don't we?
Yeah, why not? But no, I always know because, look, I always get souped up for this matchup with my buddies, and the last couple seasons, I don't know what it is, but the first time these two teams meet each other, the Mets just smoke them. So I expect something like that to happen. But I'm not going to be surprised if Eichhoff pitches well. He's been doing very well quietly. We talked about him the last time we did the podcast. He added more of a curveball instead of the slider that he was throwing, and that's been keeping batters off base. He has quality starts in eight of his last nine appearances, so got to keep that in mind. But again, just DeGrom has owned the Phillies. Again, nobody's got great numbers against them, and very, very hard to bet against them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I like DeGrom. I've always liked DeGrom. The problem I have with DeGrom is, can he get run support? I'm willing to say yes. But it's not like, you know, it's a given. They threw up a stat last night. And remember, the Mets, they threw up a stat last night that said that 51% of all their runs come via the home run. and that was second only to the Baltimore Orioles. Now, the crazy stat about that, or the crazy thing about that, is that, you know, it really honestly doesn't matter because of the fact that you've got, you know, you're going into a Phillies ballpark that is more conducive to the home run than Citi Field.
And smells like funnel cake everywhere.
Oh, does it?
It's glorious.
With the powdered sugar?
Yes. Oh. The smell in CBP is so it smells like the finest in the majors.
It smells like a carnival.
Yeah, it really does. It smells so damn good. But, of course, that has nothing to do with DFS. I just want to throw that in.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Bruce had a home run last night. Michael Conforto hit a freaking bomb last night. And... Okay, so here's the question. Jose Reyes is like one for eternity. He's got one hit this year. He's batting under .50.
That's what I like to say.
He's at 2,600 and in that leadoff spot. Now, if you play Jose Reyes, you cannot play Nolan Arenado or Chris Bryant. Well, I guess you could play Chris Bryant in the outfield. I'm sorry. But you can't play Nolan. You can't play Justin Turner. You can't play Solarte. Solarte's going to be multi-positional eligibility. So, you can't play a lot of these guys. So the question is it, do you start to, how is Eichhoff at holding runners on?
Not terrible. I mean, not the greatest either, so.
But he's not towards the bottom of that. Because Cameron Rupp really can't throw people out. And that's why I had interest in Jose Reyes today.
Okay. I was going to pull up these numbers here for Eichhoff, but I don't think they're too terrible.
I mean, you got to give us a little bit, guys. We're still not in midseason form with all of our, our numbers. We remember that we like looking at certain things during podcasts, and then we remember when we're talking about them on the podcast. So, that's why I have a little bit of interest in Jose Reyes today.
All right, here we go. Over the last three seasons, base runners are 10 for 17 against him. So
that's over 50%. If
you want to be a dick about it.
But it's still over 50%. You know, anything over 45% is usually typically pretty good. They're good. I like to target base stealers against those pitchers. Now, the question is, can he get on? Because what he seems to be doing right now is he's got the Willie Mays Hayes syndrome, and he's hitting everything in the freaking air. He hit the ball four times yesterday. Put the ball in play four times yesterday, and it was in the air four times.
Yeah.
There are certain people like Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story that, you know, and JD Martinez made big this where, you know, you're taught growing up to hit the ball on the ground and everything like that. Well, the analytics have kind of shown that, you know, with people trying to hit the ball in the air, it's actually producing better results. Well, that depends on the type of player you are, in my opinion. So everything in baseball is taken with a grain of salt. I don't know if I really, really, really want to go there. It's intriguing in tournaments to get off of, you know, guys like Bryant on FanDuel, Nolan, Justin Turner, guys like that. But I don't know if I really want to go there.
That's fine. And by the way, my heart goes out to all the Mets fans who can't get their leadoff runner or on base.
Yeah, because you guys have a great guy that's getting on base right now.
Hey, our leadoff hitter hit a home run.
No, I didn't mean that sarcastically. So. I meant that for real. Like Cesar Hernandez has done well.
And he hit the game winner yesterday.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
We're the Hernandez. 3-3
Phillies. Okay, we're 5-2.
Well, congratulations. You played
early season hopes, my friend. Early season hopes. We just took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, and we were the first team ever ever to hit back-to-back jacks off of Clayton Kershaw.
Congratulations. A little wind-aided.
Oh, yeah, because those were not bombs.
I don't watch Rockies games. I don't care what happens there.
You should.
When I have them in my lineup, I do, of course. I kid. All right, in terms of bats in this one, I don't mind Michael Conforto. He's actually had very good numbers here against Eichhoff.
Tommy Joe.
Tommy Joe, yes. I'm not going to do that against DeGrom. I don't feel very confident about Lady here against these Phils. He, like, the last time, even in Philly, he had a ridiculous game. I think he faced one batter above the minimum the last time he was here in Philly. Just a wretched day. But yeah, look, DeGrom, I like my money more than I like my fandom of the Phillies, so DeGrom will be my pitcher today. And if I'm going to do any Mets bats, probably,
Here's my question. Is DeGrom your pitcher because Lester has weather concerns?
That's a good question. I wouldn't even say it's because of the weather concerns, but yeah, that certainly adds another dynamic to it.
Because you've got Lester as a lefty going against the Dodgers, who suck against left-handed pitching. Let's just go ahead and put it out there.
Yes, they are terrible.
I know they got to Tyler Anderson yesterday, but I think that's more of Tyler Anderson not being completely mentally in the game. Tony Walters was getting frustrated with him. Tyler Anderson wasn't backing up throws when he should have been, and that's not usually what we get out of Tyler Anderson, so I'm willing to kind of take it a little bit. Now, the Dodgers do have guys that can hit left-handed pitching, don't get me wrong, but overall, as a team, I don't think that they are as good as they should be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Dodgers, well, we will certainly get to them, but and I have a great point about the Dodgers going up against lefties that I'll bring up then. But, yeah, I don't know. If we're talking about Mets bats tonight, Asdrubal Cabrera and Michael Conforto both have pretty solid numbers against Eichhoff. And, yeah, I wouldn't even mind some Curtis Granderson. Maybe a couple of his fly balls find their way out of the ballpark at Citizens Bank Field. But yeah, if anybody, it's going to be left-handed bats against Jared Eichhoff. They do much better against right-handed. They're then right-handed, so note that. All right, let's get to the next game here. We've got the Cincinnati Reds at the Pittsburgh Pirates. Brandon Finnegan, the lefty, going up against Tyler Glasnow, the righty for the Pirates. Both very promising prospects here in baseball for these two guys. Finnegan got off to an excellent start in 2017. Seven innings, only gave up one hit, no walks, nine strikeouts there against the Phillies in his first start of the season. If you guys remember, that was a game that was supposed to be that was the rain delay game where, you know, they ended up starting it late. Wasn't supposed to play at all, but they did. And, you know, lucky thing for Finnegan, he got the win and all that. He was actually pretty good against Pittsburgh last season, 2-1 with a 2.03 ERA and three starts against them. Then Tyler Glasnow, one of the top prospects in the Pirates system. It seems like when we talk about the Pirates pitching staff, we basically say, oh, yeah, they got one of the top prospects in baseball.
Yeah, well, they've got a really deep pitching pool prospect, but they're really young.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and this will be Glasnow's first start of the season, so I don't expect him to have a huge leash in this one, but again, going up against the Reds, that's supposed to inspire hope. Carlos Martinez.
Do you have his? I've got his numbers here, so everybody can kind of get an idea. He pitched 16. He is a left-handed pitcher, just so you know. He in 16 and a third innings last year, he allowed 9 earned runs.
Glasnow?
Yeah, Glasnow.
He's a righty.
I've got him as a lefty.
Bats lefty.
That would be the reason why. So I will get that switched. He had a 4.96 ERA, 4.88 Sierra. His whip was a 1.53, 13.3 walk percentage with an 11.6 swinging strike percentage. His ground ball percentage was 50, which is phenomenal. But his soft contact rate is, now it's a smaller sample size, don't get me wrong, but it's still the highest on the slate. So he's really kind of good, and his hard contact percentage is one of the highest on the slates as well. So basically what that tells me is that he's either missing bats completely and getting like some really, really weak contact that just people are rolling over, or he's getting hit very, very, very hard. His grade's about to change, though. So go ahead and talk while I...
I was going to say, he's a real tall sumbitch at 6'8". So that should be fun watching him against Billy Hamilton. But, yeah, look, there's really not much to go off with Glass now. We do know that he's got a very promising history – or I'm sorry, real promising future for him. This probably isn't the spot to go with them. The furthest he went in the game last season was 5 1/3. That was his first start. He did have a very strong finish to the season at St. Louis, where he went 5 innings, gave up a hit, an earned run, did give up 4 walks, but also 4 strikeouts and 79 pitches. Probably, I'm not necessarily looking to target this guy, but at the same time, you still don't want to take that chance with him on the mound tonight. Obviously, this is a game where we should be looking at Reds bats. Just looking at the splits, left-handed batters did better against him. But again, this is all just a small sample size, so we're not going to find, much of anything working out, according to the splits and the matchups and whatnot. You're kind of just going to have to get sort of creative with some different things here.
Yeah, they started him in the bullpen for the season, quote unquote. So you don't have to really worry about that. We're going to start talking about bullpen usage a little bit more. I think they're going to be a little bit shorter, obviously going to have a little bit shorter of a leash, but, the Pirates only used Bastardo, Rivero, and Trevor Williams yesterday. Everybody else kind of rested up a little bit, at least 2 days, if not, only threw on Saturday. If not, they threw on Sun or on Friday. So it's not like if Glasnow gets in trouble, he's going to have to sit out there and take a beating. I don't think they're going to want to do that to this kid with him only pitching 16 innings in the bigs. But he's not an option, because I don't think he's an option for a quality start. Like, he would have to pitch very, very well and efficiently for Clint Hurdle to leave him out there for 6 innings. I think if he gets to the 5th inning, he hasn't allowed a run, unless he's got a perfecto or no-no going and been very efficient doing it, which I don't see. But, I think if he gets to the 5th inning and they've got to lead him the chance to win the game, they're going to probably get him out of there and try to use his bullpen, because they can get some length out of there and hope to get some length out of the rest of their starters in the series. So,
all right. Any bats? Let's talk about those. Any in particular standing out to you here?
There it is. Josh Harrison, maybe, as a second baseman. It depends on what Hurdle does with this lineup, because they've put Jordy Mercer at the top against lefties, but then they've also batted him second and put Starling Marte at the top against lefties. So we really don't know what they're going to do. Even though it's Brandon Finnegan in this ballpark, I don't have a lot of interest with these guys today. Brandon Finnegan's not a great pitcher, but he's not somebody that, he's got a lot of high strikeout upside, but he's just kind of one of those meh type situations,
Yeah, absolutely. I think, this could even be a decent spot for Andrew McCutchen to finally get going. The Pirates have plenty of right-handed bats to attack Finnegan with. Let's not make a mistake about that. And, it's kind of funny when we look at Finnegan's performance against the Phillies, because they've been slugging in pretty much every single game except the one that they faced him. So is that more of a Finnegan plus, or is that, you know, the fact that the Phillies probably thought they weren't even going to play that? It looks like neither team thought they were going to play that day, and, you know, the sticks really didn't show up for each side.
We've seen Brandon Finnegan have these type of games where he'll just go out and just...
I'm a Finnegan fan.
You know, we've seen these. But let's keep in mind, you know, he's not the lowest graded pitcher on the slate for nothing. I mean, yeah, the Pirates don't have a great ISO against, you know, left-handed pitching. Their projected starting lineup today has an ISO of 129 against left-handed pitching. I mean, these Pirates bats, they just don't scare me right now. I mean, we used to love Jung Ho Kang. Kang really, really, really changes the complexion of this lineup. And with him not being in there, this is a great way to, get contrarian, possibly, is it is a pitcher's ballpark. The weather's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. You know, it's going to be 74. It's going to be nice. It's, you know, I think this is just a stay away for me on the offensive side for Pittsburgh and for both of these pitchers.
All right. I'm going to say McCutcheon. I like him. So if you got to get your exposure, that could be the way.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, hey, look, didn't say you had to like it, right? Sure. All right, let's raise a banner in Chicago, shall we? Alex Maybe. Wood goes for the Dodgers, and John Lester goes for the Cubs in this one. Keith says maybe, but
I just think God hates the Cubs.
You say maybe. I say you're being generous because there is a – let's see here. We've got – starting from 5 o'clock Central Time, we've got a 67% chance of rain, and it kind of stays in that area. So I'm just going to go by hour here of what each percentage is. So we're going to see 67, 77, 86, 82, 73, 60. So we're seeing that the peak of this thing right about first pitch in this game. And you know, I know these guys want to raise the banner, and I'm not sure what time they play tomorrow. Let me check, because you know what? This is why they built in the rainout rule for home openers, right? So this is a perfect discussion.
Are they off tomorrow?
Yeah, they are off tomorrow. So they might end up raising this damn thing tomorrow. You know, baseball teams do this with home openers, and I thought it was hysterical that the Rays did it this season because they play in a dome, and you know, there's really no reason.
Hey, they wanted to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I guess so. So
we didn't do that. We played Friday and Saturday, and screw baseball.
Yeah, I guess they probably forgot about you guys up there. Well, I mean, you're so damn high up there, nobody can see you. So there's a very good chance that this game gets played tomorrow, and that's okay. But, you know, the game only goes off, a little under an hour before first pitch. 7:05 is the lock here. So we should have a pretty good idea of what's going on in this game, although the matchups for the Cubs here are fantastic, going up against Alex Wood. You know, just such a right-handed laden lineup there. You know, you're going to see guys like Chris Bryant, maybe Contreras, Ben Zobrist, a little more pop from the right side. You know, Baez, Addison Russell, guys like that, all going to be fantastic options. But will they even throw pitches in this game? That's a major if in this one. And you'll probably see a lot more people just go right to that Jacob deGrom against the Phillies sort of thing, especially if this game, you know, kind of is peaking like we see it is on the radar right now.
Yeah, I don't mind this at all. I think that I think that this is an easy, easy fade. If you're building multiple lineups, and I'm talking like MME style, I don't mind throwing Lester out there in a couple and hope that you get lucky. But for me, it's an easy fade. And I hope they – I don't know if they will, but I hope they announce it earlier in the afternoon what's gonna happen here. So
I'm sure they will. If they do play, John Lester would be a fantastic option. Just as I was – as I alluded to earlier about the L.A. Dodgers, one of the worst teams against left-handed pitching last season, I made a shit ton of money one night using Matt Moore, of all pitchers, who's actually going in the early slate today. Up against these Dodgers. That's just an example.
Didn't
of how
he
shitty they
almost
are.
Throw a no hitter against them?
He sure as hell did. Remember he lost it with the final out?
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
It was the final out, or it was in the final inning. I don't remember if it was the final out or if he was two outs away. But yeah,
he
took it into the ninth. So yeah, I mean, look, Lester is one of the best big game pitchers in baseball. He would certainly be a good idea. I mean, a Cubs stack with Lester would even be a good idea in this game. But again, we'll keep you updated in the Slack chat channel for all of our DFS Army members, but this is a game to certainly monitor tonight.
Yep, it sure is. It's there and it's Chicago. Things could change real quick, but this is definitely something that we're going to have to pay attention to because, I love Lester tonight, and normally I don't play Lester at all, but I love Lester tonight. And if I can, get him and a couple Cubs bats, then I will be extremely happy.
Yeah. All right, last game of the night. Let's talk about your boys. We got the San Diego Padres at the Colorado Rockies. Trevor Cahill for the Padres, or as I like to call them, the Spanish Fathers, up against Tyler Chatwood for the Rockies in this one. I don't have many notes for this one because I didn't get to this part last night. Stayed up pretty damn late doing the early slate. But what can you tell us here about Chatwood?
He really had a kind of a bad start his last game. We kind of liked him because of the fact that he was, you know, so good on the road last season.
And by we, Keith means I, like him.
No, he was extremely popular across the DFS industry last time, or last game out.
Don't lull me in with your Rocky love, right? I don't need that in my life.
Whatever. Last season at home, he had a 6.12 ERA compared to on the road, a 1.69, which is actually kind of weird because his splits before that were not as drastic from, home to road. They were more evened out, I would say. 3.32 on the road compared to 5.5 on the road, 5.05 at home. Padres left-handed bats, they are firmly in play today. These are two teams that know each other very, 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 very well. That's what kind of scares me tonight as far as from a Rockies fan point of view. You've got Will Myers, who's taking them deep. Jankowski, Solarte, I think all these Padres are in play. Today, so.
All right. With Chatwood, you're probably not going to want to go to either pitcher in this scenario. That's a given, being at Coors Field. But these Rocky bats, the two names that keep popping up for me, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story, both guys that I want exposure to in my lineup tonight. What's been going on with the Rockies offense? Who's popping off? Who's not? I know they kind of disappointed a lot of people in Milwaukee those last two games, but overall, how are we looking over there?
DJ LeMahieu's struggling. He's not.
I like DJ.
He's not. hitting the ball right now. I know that sounds really bad, but he's just not hitting the ball. Mark Reynolds is absolutely just on fire. Trevor Story's struggling a little bit, but you don't roster Trevor Story to get, you know, singles up the middle. You roster him to get, you know, dongs and home runs. I'm probably not going to play Story today just because I like another shortstop a little bit better. I'm just going to go ahead and spit it out there. I like Asdrubal Cabrera better than I like Trevor Story today. Nolan, Charlie Blackman, Cargo, I think they are all in play.
Yeah, I certainly dig that. Trevor Cahill, you know, you're probably going to see more of the Padres bullpen.
Jared Cozart is starting tonight.
Oh, he is starting?
Yes,
all right.
They changed that because Cahill, I guess, had a blister or something. But
Gotcha. All right, so, yeah, Jared Cozart, not exactly, you know, somebody that we're going to be afraid of anyway. Has he started yet this season?
I don't believe so.
That one caught me off guard. All right, with a lot of these Padres rotation guys, you know, you're not going to see too many of them eat up a lot of innings. So, you know, the Padres do have one of the worst bullpens in baseball, excluding Jeannie Baker. But of course, you know, they're going to, these are guys that are going to eat up a lot of innings, but they're also guys that we can target for a lot of innings as well with the offensive bats. You know, it's going to be an interesting lineup construction to see what people come up with, being as how, you know, DeGrom probably going to be that chalk pitcher if we don't have John Lester available in this game or available on the slate. So, you know, how much Rockies exposure? And what do you think some of the cheaper options in this game would be to get some exposure?
All from the San Diego Padres, because the highest in the projected lineup is Will Myers at 4,000 on FanDuel. Let's see. Manuel Margot, Travis Jankowski, both 3K. Solarte, 32, Shimp, 34, Renfro, 3, Hedges, 3, Ibar, 3. It's like FanDuel forgot that the Rockies were playing in, or that the Padres were playing in Denver, and they just said, forget it. Will Myers should be, just as, like, even the fact that Carlos Gonzalez is 3,900, you know, Gerardo Parra is 34, Trevor Story is 4. Like, these guys, DraftKings does it right when Coors Field is on the slate. FanDuel has yet to figure it out. We thought they had it towards the latter part of last season, and they just kind of reverted back to everything. So this is how you handle it. You multi-enter tonight. You stack the hell out of Coors in like three different ways. In case it goes off, you have enough live teams, and then you start building other teams with some Coors exposure. I hate playing on FanDuel on nights like tonight because of the fact that they don't have the pricing figured out, and it makes for not a fun game, in my opinion. Because if Coors goes for 15 runs tonight, then, you know, everybody's going to have them, and it's not really going to give you any sort of advantage. Because it's only a 4-game slate or a 5-game slate, something like that. So,
gotcha. All right, well, that should do it for us on this pod. Any closing thoughts going into tonight or today?
Nope. Let's have some fun.
Indeed. All right. Once again, if you want to join us at the DFS Army, want to see what's going on inside the barrack walls, go to dfsarmy.com. Use the promo code OPENINGDAY. That'll get you 7 free days. You can check us out, see if you like us or not. I bet you'll like us. I mean, not many people hate us. Kind of a big deal around here. But do so, and you know, a lot of people have already done this 7-day free trial, and they love it. I don't even want to say that everybody's making a profit, because that sounds cheesy and stupid, but it's all about working together to build lineups, not just handing you lineups, you know? So if you're working on your PhD or anything like that, this might not be the best spot for you. You need time for baseball, folks.
Yes, you do.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Good chunk of games to get to, so you'll have us for a good amount of time. We are the DFS Army, and we go. Peace.
Peace out.